Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush Friday interview edition, a very special edition, because I have two winsome, lovely ladies staring at my face over the internet. Annie Reese and Holly Fry.
Hey.
Hello, hello.
And we're here to talk about just a little movie called The Empire Strikes Back.
It's a little upstart indie film, which it kind of is.
Yeah, exactly.
So take it away. I'll be back in an hour.
I think we need more than an hour.
Annie and I need an hour just to talk about Irvin Kershner. Then we'll move on.
Yeah. I mean, I'm counting on both of you to sort of fill me with knowledge, because obviously this is, not obviously, this is my favorite movie of the whole franchise, as it is a lot of people. And it came out when I was 9 years old, after having seen Star Wars in the theater when I was six, three or four or five times. I don't remember how many times I went. And I loved it, obviously, but the difference between 6 years old and 9 years old walking into a theater with that anticipation is a really big thing. And there's something I can't even articulate what it was like being a kid and seeing this goddamn movie.
Yes.
Oh, I've become because I don't remember a time never having seen Star Wars.
Yeah.
I've become like a collector of people's experiences, because I can't, I can never have that like shock factor of I've always known the big twist at the end. So I'll ask people, I'll take notes like, what was it like? Did you see it coming? What did you think?
None of us saw that coming.
Didn't see it coming.
None of us had a clue. It was a gasper. And I have such funny memories from the first time I saw it. I went with, it was a weird time in my life. My family was about to move from where we had lived for quite some time to a new place. My dad was military, so we moved periodically. And like, it was one of the last things I did with my best friend's family. So I have like weird stuff tied to that. Like, there's a great memory that I will never forget where I was sitting next to her mom, who was the sweetest woman. And during the snow speeder chase, she just leaned over to me and said, I think I'm going to barf. Like, just the motion of that on the big screen was so unlike what anybody had seen. We forget that every moment of these films was really quite groundbreaking. And so I always think of it as when Sandy thought she might throw up during the movie.
Yeah. You know what hit me last night and this morning? I had to split it up because I had to do a very late night West Coast thing for book promotion, which was fun, but I ended up, it was like 12:15 last night, and I was like, I got to finish this in the morning. But it, there were so many firsts in this movie, and I've noted them, and we'll kind of get to them here and there, but I was just sort of struck by how many firsts there were in the franchise, like little things, like it was the first time, you know, when Vader floated down those stairs during the battle, it's like it was the first time we saw him move like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember being a kid being like, oh, shit, he can do that.
this just got 10 times scarier.
A lot of little things like that throughout the whole movie, though, that ended up you sort of take for granted now, but they were done for the first time in this movie.
Well, and a lot of things that changed movie making that were done for the first time.
Like what?
Right. Like, so Phil Tippett, of course, very well known now in effects and animation. But this was like the first time he invented go motion, which is stop motion. Normally you pose your character, your armature, you take the picture, you move it, you take the picture. He had the idea when they were animating the AT-ATs, which some people like to say AT-AT. I like AT-AT. Both are fine.
People say AT-AT?
Oh, yeah.
I do.
People get...
Do you? Annie's an AT-AT?
I didn't know this was a controversial opinion.
It's Star Wars. Everybody wants to fight about everything. But I'm a big fan of both are great. But he had the idea of what if we take the frame while we're actually moving the aperture so it looks like it has motion blur. That completely changed stop motion animation like forever in that one moment. he later, of course, continued to innovate in that space with Jurassic Park, but where he was like the person that was like, okay, if we're going digital, we have to figure out how to use these skills and move these over here. But like, I mean, that's one of those things that now GoMotion gets used all the time. Standard. It's a standard approach. And it was innovated on this film.
Annie, what was your entry point as a younger Star Wars fan, as in someone who, you know, wasn't 9 years old when it came out in 1980?
1980, yep. 40th anniversary. I'm glad we got this in this year.
Oh, wow.
I have my shirt on. Right.
I have that shirt, too. I'm wearing it. We're matching. I'm just
we're
so cold.
We're twinsical.
Y'all are the best.
Like I said, I don't remember a time not seeing them. And it was one of the few movies, because we only had one TV and one VCR. So Star Wars was one of the few series that there was no fighting between my siblings and my parents. Like, we all liked it. The last 30 minutes of every VHS ended up getting ruined. I had a huge crush on Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill. It was my longest running, strongest crush. And particularly Luke Skywalker in Empire Strikes Back was my favorite. Even though at the time, Return of the Jedi was my favorite movie, which I think is interesting because I didn't have all the expectations that people had for Return of the Jedi. So I think that's why it's still my second favorite. Like, because I was a kid when I saw it and I didn't have all this, like, what's going to happen? I've just always known. We saw it in theaters when it was re-released. It's just got all this, like, nostalgia for me. And during the pandemic, when I'm so stressed, it's become like I'm on a Star Wars bender. I'm on like such a Star Wars bender.
It's a healthy bender to be on.
Yeah, comparatively. And, you know, keeping with my tradition, I watched Empire Strikes Back with my mom before this. And she was the sweetest. And she listened to all my very like wonky Star Wars opinions. And then when I told her about my like very silly quest to get Mark Hamill to tweet at me, she offered to join Twitter and get him to do it. I was like, well, that is the sweetest thing you've ever said to me, but please don't. I don't want to put you through that.
That'd be pretty
Mark,
cute, actually.
Mark, talk That's to my daughter. She's so
She's
nice.
Really nice.
You really
Has
have to do
at you
it.
Yet? No?
No, I'm too shy. I'm too shy to do anything about it. It's not going to happen, but, you know, we've been mentioned in tweets together, so I might accept that.
Right?
He was handsome in this. I was when I was watching it, finishing up this morning, there were a couple of shots. And I don't know, I never really thought of him as that handsome because he's next to Harrison Ford. And but today I was like, you know, Mark Hamill, he looks pretty hot in this.
He has the most beautiful eyes.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Right. I'm not
he has
even
a little dimple.
Luke was never my thing. I was definitely a Han girl. But like, I was not ignorant of the fact that he was, you know, had incredibly beautiful eyes, and he does have that cute little chin, and I totally got my friends who were like, Luke. I was like, yeah, I get it.
Right.
I love the conspiracy theory because, you know, there was that like car accident and people, I was reading articles celebrating the 40th anniversary, and some people were like, about Mark Hamill's car accident, he died in it and he's not even the same person. I'm like, he looks the same to me.
What?
He just looks older. Like, yeah, it's wild.
That's crazy. Carrie Fisher's so beautiful in this, too. And I was maybe I was too young at 6 years old, but I wasn't one of these kids who had a big crush on Princess Leia. But again, watching it last night, and this is the first time I've seen it in probably, I mean, prepare to be offended, but probably 6 or 7 years. But I was like, man, Carrie Fisher was just beautiful in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, particularly. This is, to me, like all of Leia's best looks, right? Yeah. Those are her best costumes.
Yeah, that hair. Mm-hmm.
That Bespin gown is what made me fall in love with clothes. That's one of the two garments that I can literally pinpoint and go, this is why I love clothes. I did not wear my Bespin Leia costume for this recording.
Oh.
But I do have several versions of it ready to go at any time. I have
change.
One that I made. I have one that I made just for running in.
Oh, my God.
Because I ran the Princess Half Marathon wearing it 1 year. But yeah. Oh, she looks so spectacularly beautiful in this film.
Yeah, and their chemistry with her and Harrison Ford, and you know, especially in that beginning hallway exchange, is just so white hot and cute, and it's just palpable. I mean, it's it just jumps off the screen as these two are, and especially now that, you know, later on when we see what happens with them, it's really fun to go back and see those early days of the scoundrel and her worship, you know.
Which is funny because apparently they were not getting along on set.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't know if you've read Princess Diarist, where she talks about how during Star Wars they did have an affair.
Oh, really?
According to her, in any case. And that was apparently over and things were a little contentious at this point. Mm. And so it's kind of funny that what came of that, what blossomed out of it, was this fantastic on-screen energy, which is pretty interesting. I have always said that this is the most romantic movie to me in the entire world and is about as much romance as I can handle in a movie. Just no shade to the rom-coms. They're just, I can't. Whereas this is like, yes, a little bit of fighting and a little, which is not how I am with my husband at all. But for film, this is it.
You bring the romance at home?
Sure. I do want to ask, related to this, have either of you read From a Certain Point of View? There are now two volumes of it.
No.
So Chuck, to catch you up on what it is, there are these anthology books that have come out. There's one for A New Hope, and now the one for Empire just came out recently, where they get a ton of different writers, and they each write a short story about some element of the movie, and then they piece it all together, and you kind of get a different view of what was going on in that film from different characters. Like, even in the Empire one, you will think very differently about the Wampa afterwards.
Really? Yeah.
But what's really fun to me, and why I mention it now, is because several different writers chose to create this thing, and I don't know how much they conferred with each other on this particular point, that like everyone at Echo Base knew Han and Leia were into each other, and they were so sick of watching him trying to impress her by kind of being a jerk, but also be, and it just makes it even funnier for me now.
Like workplace complaints.
Right, where they're just like, there was a betting pool going on among the comms team about when he would finally just tell her he liked her, and like, it's such a fun read for anybody that's into Star Wars.
I think did one of the McElroys write on one of those?
Yeah, the R5 story in A New Hope, I think.
Okay, that sounds
for. I think so, but don't quote me on that because right. I can't make new memories. So
what a
I
great gig that is.
Yeah.
By the way, we should also say acknowledge David Prowse, who passed away recently. Very big loss for the Star Wars community.
Yeah.
Yes. And who apparently leaked the most things during this movie.
Yeah. He was like, well, wasn't there like six people? They said, no, don't tell them anything.
Yeah, that he was not told about the Vader being Luke's father thing because they didn't trust him at that point.
Really? They kept that a secret?
Yeah. Yeah. It was always like three people knew. And then like when the cast saw the movie, I guess the sound people knew. They were like, wow. I didn't know that.
Well, when they filmed, allegedly, like, that line wasn't said at all.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Hamill knew, and he reacted as though it had been said.
Right.
They told him the night before, but David Prowse did not know at all. So he just thought, like, this will insert something later, not knowing how much gravity that moment would have.
Oh, did they just say, like, how should I gesticulate? And he's like, maybe as if you're saying something really important and shocking.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. We're still working on the script. I don't know.
Who do y'all picture when, or do you picture anyone at all? And is it just Vader? But do you picture Hayden Christensen grown up or James, I was about to say James Earl Ray, like a dummy. James Earl Jones or Prowse?
Sebastian Shaw.
Me too.
Who's that?
Charles.
I'm sorry.
Chazzy. He was originally, you know, at the end of Jedi when the mask and helmet come off. That's Sebastian Shaw.
Okay, I'm looking now.
Tell your sister you were right.
Oh.
It's Sebastian Shaw.
Well, yeah. Now that I'm looking, I forgot about that guy.
Okay.
That's totally who you should picture. Well, the other first in this movie is, or one of the other first is when you see that, you know, iconic shot from the rear when that helmet's coming on,
yeah.
You get that glimpse. And I remember being 9 years old and maybe just being a dumb 9 year old and not knowing any backstory. That was the first time I was sort of like, oh my God, like there's a real human in there.
Yeah.
And he is messed up.
Yeah.
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 I think this this movie is so great because the first one is like really fun and it has all these archetypes we can connect to. And the second one is just like deepens those things. And Darth Vader, like as a kid, I just thought, oh, he's the monster. I didn't really put much depth into him. But by introducing him, like, no, he's human. You can see him and he's kind of messed up. And actually, he's the father of the hero character. And it just adds so much and it ups the stakes. And I mean, every time I watch this movie, my friends can confirm this, I react as though I'm learning for the first time. Oh, my God. It's so shocking.
I mean, that whole sequence is it may be one of the best looking sequences in the whole franchise, with the steam and their silhouettes and that orange lighting everywhere. Yeah. It just looks fucking fantastic. And it holds up so, so well.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's my favorite 20 minutes of cinema of all time. And this is my favorite movie of all time, if that wasn't clear. But I also noticed that behind Vader at that scene, it's like a spider web, the thing behind him. And he's like a spider at the center waiting in this trap. And then that's repeated with the Emperor in Return of the Jedi, where it's sort of like a spider web behind him.
And we didn't even have Krichnas yet, so.
What's a Krichna?
Did I just go a little too far?
Just tell me what it is.
They're like spider-like creatures. I think we first saw them in Star Wars Rebels.
Okay.
And then they're very similar, but I think not an identical species to the thing that showed up, the things that showed up in the ice cave in The Mandalorian that freaked a lot of people, including my husband, out. It was a little too real for him in the arachnid zone. Krichnas.
Well, since you brought up The Mandalorian, this is our first taste of Boba Fett. And what is it about Boba Fett? Is it the mystery? Is it that cool ass outfit? Like, I remember being a kid and everyone just being like, who is that? And why do I want to run out and get that action figure next?
And shoot that rocket into my mouth and choke, which we never got to do. I don't know, because I was never a Boba Fett person.
Me either. Oh, really? I've always been kind of confused.
I was literally the person in terms of bounty hunters that came out of this movie and was like, what is that lizard dude about? Like, I was way interested in Bossk and IG-88. As a fun little trivia moment, do you guys remember the first time Boba Fett's name was ever said on screen in a movie?
No.
It's not said, right?
E.T.
E.T.?
Oh.
Yeah, because he had been in the holiday special, but his name isn't mentioned until Elliot is playing with his action figures and he mentions Boba Fett.
Yeah, I remember
that.
The
first time it was said in a film.
Well, that's one of the things about these movies is a lot of things aren't ever mentioned, but because they were so successful at merchandising and like toys.
Right,
and books
they
and
became
all that stuff.
Their own legendary things, yeah,
like the Wampa, you never saw the Ewoks, I'm pretty sure, is never said. Emperor Palpatine is never said, at least in these like original trilogy. And we all kind of know that stuff because that's how impactful these movies were.
But we saw the Emperor for the first time in this one,
yes, yeah, which is another thing I love because you start with Darth Vader thinking he's the ultimate villain, and in this one, they're like, wait, there's someone else,
he's got a boss,
yes,
yeah, that was a big deal. Because, you know, Darth Vader was the scariest. It really kind of hit me last night of how ingrained, especially when you see these things as a kid, like I guess everyone probably does. TIE Fighter bad, Imperial Cruiser bad, Vader bad, Stormtrooper bad. It's just, you don't even think of them. It's so ingrained. It's like a part of our DNA. Even now, like when I see those TIE Fighters and I hear that sound, I'm just like, oh no. And when I see those X-Wings, I think, all right. It's so weird. It's instinct.
Shout out to Ben Burtt for those sound designs. Amazing.
I think the sound design and the music, this is the first time you hear Imperial March, which is just iconic. And I've read recently, we did an episode on Princess Leia over on Stuff Mom Never Told You. And I just read all these fascinating articles about how Star Wars is a part of like American mythology. You can't, even if you don't know, it's a part of you. Even if you haven't seen it, you probably know the twist. And there are these things that you've absorbed without knowing. about these movies.
I'm going to have to listen to that episode, Annie.
The longest outline I've ever written. It's 25 pages.
Oh, wow. I can't wait, because it's Leia really comes into her own in this movie. And I think it's easy to take for granted the fact that you're seeing a movie in 1980 with a woman giving the orders to the army. And I was 9, so you didn't think about that stuff then. I just thought, like, yeah, so that makes sense. But looking back, that was a really big deal.
Yeah. And I like to think, you know, when you meet Leia, she's already a hero. Like, she's already there. Luke and Han have to, like, go on these journeys. And sure, she has an arc as well. But I love how Luke breaks in. He's like, I'm here to rescue you. And she's like, no, this isn't working
for
me.
That's cute.
Let me take over this plan for you, because this isn't good. I love her.
She was a badass, but I think in this movie she became a true leader.
Yeah.
Or not became one. It, you know, like you all great it. Star Wars movies, it joins it in progress, which is one thing I just love about, and especially Empire, it joins with so much inertia with all that first act stuff on Hoth and leaves you with the greatest cliffhanger in movie history, maybe. And I remember being thrilled at the cliffhanger and so upset that I was going to have to wait.
Yeah.
Like, and you didn't have to wait. You got to just pop in the next one. It was cruelty to have to wait years.
It was a little brutal. Yeah.
It was very hard for a young boy.
I'm sorry for your difficulties.
That's all right. I made it through.
Oh, yes. These are the greatest trials of our lives.
yes. I actually,
but
did.
Also,
oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say what a risk it was to put it in the middle of this trilogy, to give us such a dark film, to give us a cliffhanger. This is the one where Lucas was like, no, I'm going to pay for it myself, with a lot of borrowed money that he was very nervous about, and had to do a lot of, like, hat in hand kind of promising to various people to make it all happen.
Did he pay for it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. He was pretty disillusioned by the studio system by the time Star Wars, which now we call A New Hope, was done. And so, I mean, he was doing this, and, like, Lee Brackett was working on the original screenplay while he was getting Lucasfilm really established as a full company, and not just kind of like a company on paper that was needed for legal reasons. Like, he was getting the offices set up in Marin County. He was getting his team together. He was getting ILM really up to speed to be able to do the level of effects that he wanted, now that he could do a slightly bigger budget movie. It's a lot to think about somebody in their 20s going, like, I'm going to take on $33 million of debt.
That's nuts.
And take a risk that will either make my career or kill it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what my point was going to be similar to that of, like, at this time, there weren't really sequels. They were thought of as worse. And then to have this movie coming off this really, like, popular, fun, you know, space romp, to start in the middle, like, until I was reading about this, I didn't really realize it has no real beginning. It has no real end.
Yeah.
And it's, it is darker, and it has these just more complicated themes. And then you're introducing, like, a puppet, which there's so many things about Star Wars that now we just love them, and we know, like, oh, this was going to succeed, but you didn't know that was going to work. Like,
no.
Introducing a mentor that was played by a puppet. Like,
I very clearly remember adults in my life going, wait, they're going to have Muppets in this one? Like, just complete incredulity that it was ever going to be anything worthwhile.
Oh, boy. Boy, were you wrong.
But you didn't know that.
I mean, I was like, yeah, give me the Muppets. That's cool. But adults were a little jaded
Oh, I thought you said you were.
Oh, no. Okay. I was 9 like you. I didn't have incredulity yet.
Yeah.
But then, like, there's also the whole, they start with their big action sequence, which is a flip of most blockbuster movies.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them do it now, I think.
Well, after this, this changed completely the trilogy setup, the way that the stories are told in those, and then also the summer blockbuster, which I didn't know, but this was the beginning of the A New Hope was the beginning of the summer blockbuster.
I might argue Jaws.
Well, Jaws, right. Yeah, but did you know A New Hope was rescheduled because of Smokey and the Bandit? They thought that was going to be more successful.
Hey, that's Very quick. Go ahead.
That makes sense, right? It's like big names. It's fun. It's comedy. Sexy ladies. Like, I could see where somebody on paper went, this is the movie that's going to make money this year. Like, I understand that.
So, everyone talks about Larry Kasdan and the writing, but someone I don't know much about is Lee Brackett, and I would love to hear more about her.
Well, one of the reasons we don't know a lot about her is because she died 2 weeks after she finished the initial script.
Really?
Yeah, she had cancer. She wrote this while she was, in the ends of her treatment.
So she wrote the first draft by herself?
Yes.
And then it was handed over to Lawrence Kasdan?
And George Lucas, yeah.
Wow.
They reworked it.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
That's one of the reasons. There have been many discussions over the years about how much is really hers that remains in the final version.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she doesn't get a lot of attention because she was not around and she didn't, work on subsequent projects. She didn't do the revisions on it, etc.
Do we have any real intel on her original story?
Those original drafts exist. Like, one of the interesting things is that Yoda had, I think he was called the Critter in the very first one.
Aww, that's cute.
And then that evolves a few times, but they're all kind of names like that, where it's like the little monkey. The themes got a little bit darker in the rework. I haven't done a lot of scholarship level study of how that shifts.
I feel like, wasn't it in her version, there was the twin was revealed at the end and her name was like Nellith or something?
There were some other familial shifts I know that went on. Like, I think Obi-Wan was even introduced as possibly being Luke's parentage instead of Vader.
Oh.
Yeah, there were a lot of stuff did change from one to the next.
And let's talk about Irvin Kershner. I know that you have a lot to say about the Kersh.
Well, it's interesting, right? The last movie he did before this was Eyes of Laura Mars, which is a Faye Dunaway film. Uh-huh. He had done a lot of television directing. He got his big break, really, because Roger Corman let him direct some TV. But it's interesting because everyone associates him with this film. Like, he could make whatever he wanted for the rest of his life, and he was always going to be Empire's director.
As it should be. What else did he do?
I was not ready to shift gears back to what else Kersh did. What's interesting, I want to mention in terms of Empire, most people will say, I think you guys would agree, I know I would, that in terms of acting and character, this is the strongest of the original trilogy.
Yeah.
And it's because Kershner was very into, like, let's work with the actors on set. Let's improvise. Let's do this. Which drove production bananas because this film went way over budget.
Yeah.
It's like when we're out in the snow of Norway is not really the time to spend a lot more money so people can say this one line a few different ways. But he was like, no, character driven. We got to let these actors figure this out. That's really because of Kershner.
So it looks like he did Never Say Never Again, the Bond film.
Yeah, that was the next thing he did, right?
When Connery came back a few years later, and then RoboCop 2.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Fantastic.
I haven't seen that, so I don't know how to react to RoboCop 2.
Well, I mean, it's...
It's been a while for me, to be
honest.
It's
not RoboCop 1, that's all I'll say.
Well, I haven't seen RoboCop 1, so I don't know how to react to that.
Oh, so great, Annie. So we talked a little bit about the clothes. I mean, part of the fun of seeing this as a kid was literally just seeing different hairstyles and different clothes. You know, Han, they're all sort of in largely the same clothes in the first movie, except for, with a couple of exceptions. But just seeing Han in that jacket instead of the vest, and seeing Luke sort of styled out just a little bit more and not in his, in his farm boy outfit, really kind of cool stuff. His hair looks darker too, I think.
Yeah.
All those winter clothes.
Yeah, boy, how good
parkas.
Did Han look in that fuzzy coat?
Listen. Which is brown, by the way. On film, it looks blue.
Oh, is it?
That actual costume piece is brown. One of us might have followed around the Star Wars costume exhibit as though it were the Grateful Dead when it toured.
My note here says, Han was so hot in his snow bunny clothes. Last night I was watching, I was like, va, va, voom. I forgot about that jacket.
Dear me.
Yeah, Han on a tauntaun is pretty gallant. That's some dashing business.
That stuff still looks pretty good, too. I mean, yeah. It's Go Motion, which, you know, obviously is not going to hold up to like today's standard, but it looks pretty great. I think the tauntauns look good. I think they shot them in a pretty smart way with when they weren't moving. They just sort of did those pretty tight close-ups where you just got a taste of the rest of the animal. And, you know, you thought they smelled bad on the outside. It's one of the great lines ever.
Yeah, this movie has so many quotable lines.
But most of them are Han's, too.
I don't know. Yoda's got a few.
Oh, well, sure.
Pretty much everything Yoda says is kind of quotable just because as a kid you like doing that voice.
Yeah.
Seeing if you can pull it off.
What are some of your favorite iconic moments that are not, you know, I'm your father, like the sort of on the nose ones? I know you're thinking of 3,000 things each.
I know, so. I know.
I love literally everything with Lando. I mean,
yeah.
Everything with Lando. I really think nobody gives Billy Dee Williams enough credit for how stinking good he is in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, he could have been chew the scenery level charmer, but he downplays it just enough that he's just smooth as silk at every turn.
Yeah,
even when he's being choked. Yeah.
But you really get a sense of their friendship and he even sort of has a little outfit homage at the end when he's wearing that vest. I never really picked up on that before.
Well, I feel like they were like, maybe Han Solo won't come back, so this might be the new Han Solo. He's wearing his clothes.
How did y'all feel about the Han Solo movie, seeing the scene where he won the Millennium Falcon? Did that... Were y'all good with that?
I love it. You can't see me on the microphone drawing hearts in the air. I seriously love that film. Like, Solo was like perfect for me.
Okay. Annie?
Yeah, I loved it too. I thought it was really fun. And it inspired a lot of debates, very silly debates between me and my friend about like, did Lando have sex with the Millennium Falcon? Which, don't weigh in. It's stupid. But
you're not the only people having those discussions.
I know that in my heart. I know that to be true.
FYI.
That does not surprise me at all. But it's been a minute since I've seen it. I did love Donald Glover as Lando. Like,
oh, yes.
Oh, so good.
Amazing.
So
one of the great casting calls of all time, I think.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. The cape, like his little cape.
Oh, that cape closet. It's my dream. It's my dream. I was just going to say, I think it pretty nicely and carefully set up, you know, their relationship in retrospect in a way that wasn't, for me, too heavy-handed. I know some people thought it was a little too on the nose at times, but I really thought it was kind of pitch perfect.
Yeah, I liked it. I need to see it again. My first viewing experience wasn't great, so that's never good. I need to give it its due. But in Empire... I remember when I was 9, just being so devastated by the double crossing when those doors open and you see Vader, I was crushed.
Yeah.
And, you know, he redeems himself, obviously, but I was really, really upset. You know, I remember thinking, because I'm a Pisces and Pisces are all about loyalty and friendship. And I didn't know that at the time, but there wasn't anything worse you could do. And I still feel that way than betray a friend like that.
Yeah, it's ugly, but I think it's also an interesting entry point for kids, whether they're cognizant of it or not. I'm sure none of us were like, oh, this gives me a way to think about the nuances of the difficulties of life.
Yeah.
But it does. You realize, like, if he hadn't betrayed Han, all of the people that he was responsible for in Bespin were potentially going to die or be enslaved.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, I wouldn't want to be put in that position.
And he says he has to, and he makes that quite clear.
Yeah.
Over and over.
Bespin is, BT dubs, the one place in the Star Wars universe I would move without hesitation, although I doubt I could afford an apartment.
I'm looking up Bespin now. And
it's
Cloud
City. You know,
oh, okay.
I was thinking about, like, just the set pieces in this, and they're amazing, because you got Hoth and, like, this barren, snowy place, and then you got Dagobah, which is the swamp, And then what I love about Bespin is it's beautiful, it's stunning, but then like when you go in deeper, it becomes this kind of labyrinth trap, like the lighting, the orange and the blue and juxtaposition. So it's like really pretty on the outside, mm-hmm. but the deeper and deeper you go, the more frightening and unsettling it is.
Look, everything beautiful has to be supported by probably an ugly infrastructure.
Yeah.
See, so I always said Cloud City. What is Cloud City? To explain that. What's Bespin compared to Cloud City?
They're the same.
They're the same.
Oh, it's just a different word?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We don't mean to confuse you.
I know. I mean, that's why I have y'all in here, you know?
Well, yeah. And I mean, to be fair, right, Bespin is, in fact, the planet, it's the gas giant in the star system that is the Bespin system.
Okay.
And then Cloud City hovers above all that.
Oh man, this is great.
I'm so sorry.
No, this is, I love this so much.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, so, but it gets used interchangeably on the casual, so yeah, that's what's up with that.
Yeah.
I have another first here on my list.
Yes.
When Luke gives Chewie that little scritch on the neck, which is great and adorable, that's sort of the first time I think that we see Chewie kind of treated like an animal and, you know, like you would scratch a dog. And he clearly loves it. He's not an animal, though.
I've never really thought about that.
That is Has one anyone thing. Else ever scratched him like that?
I'm trying to think if he got... I know Leia hugs him, right, in A New Hope, but I don't know if she gave him any scritches in the process.
That scritch was so cute.
It is. Listen, I like scritches. That doesn't make me an animal.
Oh, that's true. I could scritch your neck. You'd probably like that.
Right? I like it. I'm always scratching my own head like I'm a kitty, so yeah. No. Just delightful. I like, too, that we get a little bit more of Han and Chewie's kind of married people bickering.
Yeah.
Like yeah.
Fighting over the repairs and like, listen, I'm doing my part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And funny. I love the Millennium Falcon is like this old car that like never really works, but it's so loved anyway.
Well, it's so well used in this movie. The running joke of the hyperspace jump.
Yeah.
And that great sound effect, mm-hmm. you know, that like literally like a sad trombone version of a spaceship. It's great. I mean, it's a classic movie thing to bring something back a few times, and then you think you need it all these times, but when you really, really, really need it, it comes through.
Yeah. Well, and it's also like a lovely, I always think of the Millennium Falcon as really like the part of George Lucas's roots that just loves muscle cars and like drag racing and all of that. It is the beater that delivers when you need it. Right. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like to think of the Empire just having all these headaches over this ship that in theory like is just breaking down all the time and yet it manages to get away.
Did you guys, this is one of those things every time I watch this movie, because this one was the first time we really see what a dick of a manager Darth Vader is, like where I was just like, who would want to work for the Empire? Like, what is the benefit? Is it the only way that you make any kind of money in the galaxy during this time? Because I don't see another reason to take this job.
Yeah. I mean, I have a Star Wars drinking game, and every time he chokes somebody is definitely one. I have to imagine
Ozzel.
There's some type of pride, I would think, of like being competent enough for Vader, but I'm sure it's just fear all the time. And then I'm also kind of perplexed at his plan in general. Like, I don't know why he went after Han and Leia when he could have just got after Luke, but, you know, Vader's got a Vader.
It's definitely an organization where you probably have to give some thought of how high you want to work up that ladder. You know, like, is the money that much better to be chokeable or to just be one of those dudes that's definitely flying under the radar? Like, there's so many, and I didn't even notice this much until this viewing, so many great little side eye shots of all these guys that are like, Oh, shit. Is he?
Is this my time?
At the end. Oh, boy. At the end, when it finally does jump to hyperspace.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And everyone's looking around like, oh, God, are we all going to be toast? And
he walks by. There are a lot of white knuckles on the executive.
He walks by that one guy that's sort of footsing on an iPad, kind of like, okay, he's just walking by
look
me now.
Look busy.
And right as he walks by, he goes, and no one gets killed. And it's just, it's such a kind of funny moment, I think, that you got to be a little bit older to appreciate.
Yes. Yeah. I do. Have I told you guys I have two cats named after Imperial officers in this film?
What are they?
Ozzel and Veers.
Okay. And which ones are they? Are they the two?
They're gray. That was kind of the sell to my husband when a friend of ours rescued them, and I immediately wanted two of the kittens out of the four that they had rescued. And I was like, but they're gray. They're like in little Imperial uniforms, Brian. We can call them Ozzel and Veers. That was the sell.
How many cats do you have now?
Five.
Okay. Five. Any
cats? And now Ozzel and Veers are elderly gents. No, they're about to turn 16, so they're...
Wow.
They survived Vader.
Now, which guys are they in the movie? Are they the main two?
No. Admiral Ozzel is the one that gets choked because he comes out of hyperspace too close to the Hoth system.
Oh, is he the one that gets choked and dies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That scene is amazing. It's almost like a sketch, a comedy sketch.
Oh, yeah.
Like Mr. Show or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's just falling down in the background, and the other guy's kind of like half listening and half like, okay, this is happening right now, right?
Yeah. Piet is like, when do I step into frame? Like, he's just like, I don't know what to do here. And then General Maximilian Veers is the one that leads the ground assault on Hoth.
Okay.
You see him in the cockpit of one of the AT-ATs. And he's one of the few Imperials that survives.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the fun things about this movie is you can laugh at some of this stuff and that scene, which is kind of corny, and the end, which, you know, the guy futzing around on his little tablet or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you can find humor in that and not, it's not like dissing the movie in any way.
No. Yeah.
I actually, one of the things... When I think about why I love these movies so much, I think that's part of it, is they're so sincere. There are these really goofy elements, like the ice cream maker guy or Gonk or that big...
His name is Will Rohood.
I knew you would know his name. I like calling ice cream maker guy.
His name is Will Rohood.
I know he's got a whole backstory, but he's always ice cream maker guy to me.
I knew this would happen at some point.
But I love that we just love it so much, and it because it's so sincere and so genuine... It works, and you can find like joy in those things instead of like making fun of it. It's sort of like, oh, this joyful experience.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult, I think, to pull that off, but they did it.
Totally. Let's talk about the genius of splitting with bringing everyone together at the beginning. These characters that we love so much had that great first act. So much action and adventure, and then splitting everyone up or splitting up Luke from the gang and splitting up R2 and 3PO. Uh-huh. It was just such a smart move, like structurally, I think.
Yeah. I've never really appreciated how Mark Hamill really doesn't act with a lot of human people in this movie.
That's true.
Him and Frank Oz hanging out in the swamp.
And he couldn't really hear him, right? So he's just kind of like reacting when they pointed at him.
Now, why couldn't he hear him?
Because he was under a platform.
Sure.
Performing the puppetry.
But they couldn't figure that out?
Well, I mean, like, no, apparently not. Like, you know, he just was removed from the main set in a way that they would have had to drill holes, I think, everywhere to make the sound carry upward.
Yeah, all that stuff is so great, though. I mean, getting introduced to Hoth was a big deal because you see something different. Seeing Dagobah for the first time was this really cool new world, even though it was gross and swampy. And, I love camping and I love small spaces. So and it may have started with Yoda's hut, quite frankly, because last night I was getting all the spiny tingles when he was in that little tiny space and had that fire going.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh man, I want to live in that thing.
I should send you a recipe for root leaf stew. You can complete the.
Yeah. Complete
There's
the vibe.
A really good one actually in the Galaxy's Edge cookbook. I thought I would hate it.
Amazing. Because,
that cookbook is amazing, by the way, for anybody who has not picked it up. I have literally made every single recipe in it, and winners. It's not like a lot of novelty cookbooks are really, really aimed at kids and like people that don't cook. But this has legitimate cooking going on in it. And root leaf stew is like this great little vegetarian mushroom and root vegetables thing that has cinnamon in it. And I thought I would not like it. And in fact, I love it. There's my plug for a book that I have nothing to do with, other than the fact that I read it a lot.
Annie, have you ever made Star Wars meals?
Chuck, of course I've made Star Wars meals. I love this. I love feeling like you're in the minority.
I know, right?
It's so rare.
Well, duh.
I know.
What did you eat on Life Day? I know.
You know my deal. I love the shit out of these movies, but I just didn't go next level.
You did.
He didn't catch Star Wars rabies.
Yeah, y'all exist next level, so it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. I mean, and speaking of first, this is the first time you meet Yoda, and he is so opposite of what you would think when you think of this like Jedi warrior. And I love that they play on that Luke is immediately like, no, it's not you. Like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
And I love, because this is a pretty classic hero's arc with Luke's storyline, but I love how it's this one in particular, like he starts needing rescuing and he ends needing rescuing. And it's just like constant failure. And it feels like this is more of a person now and less like this hero caricature. This is somebody who has a lot to learn and has like these struggles to overcome. And then you get that big reveal at the end and you're like, well, now this is way more complicated. And like everything I knew to be true isn't true. And what do I do with that? And how dangerous that is. Like they say, this is a very dangerous time for you, Luke. It is.
That's why I liked Luke. And that's maybe we should all just do Return of the Jedi together too.
Can we please? I already put it on the list. I
mean, yeah, let's do it.
And A New Hope.
Because that movie... I've already done A New Hope, but we should do it again.
No, let's do it again.
Taron Killian picked that, which speaks to him. But that's one thing I didn't like about Jedi was that Luke was too much of a badass. And I was like, where's that guy, that kid that needed help? He was too tough and too good at doing what he did.
Which is funny because, you know, it's a very much dialed back version of Luke than what Mark Hamill initially wanted to do.
Did he want to just be like
he wanted
soldier?
To be like even more ripped? Yes, completely like, you know, super hard ass, like really, really built like he'd been doing. And George Lucas was like, no, the point is that he learns that none of that is what actually gives you strength as a Jedi.
Yeah.
It's about like learning where your center is and being part of the living force and not necessarily going out and dominating things.
That's a nice segue actually to the, I feel like in Empire, we get more of the spirituality and much more of the force and sort of what that means. It's obviously Obi-Wan Kenobi hinted that stuff in the first one, but, I don't know what you people call it. What is it? The religion?
You people.
I know, right?
No, next levelers. I don't know what next levelers call it because I don't want to say the wrong thing. I'm scared now.
No. If you call what the Jedi Order a religion?
Yeah, or just the Force, you know. It really, you get more knowledge about it in this as what it is. That's a clumsy way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easy to take for granted now that we've seen them and they've been a part of our cultural psyche for so long. But at this point, you didn't really know much about the Force and the light side and the dark side. And like that whole vision in the cave, that like really creepy vision, and having Yoda say things like luminous beings are we. It did. And I remember as a kid, and I think this is really funny now because I think it speaks to who I became. I really was suspicious of the Force. I was like, I don't know about this. And I was thinking Luke was getting tricked. And I was like, you need to stay away from this whole thing.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I would get really mad about it. My brothers would be like, what are you talking about? Like, no, I don't trust any of this, even at four. And actually, you know, it's interesting now with the prequels and everything. I always thought that, oh, God, this is probably a bigger discussion. But I always thought that Luke had what made Luke special. They were kind of trying to destroy. And then in the end, you know, he kind of chooses. He makes his own path, which worked out in various not so great ways, but also good ways. But like when he throws away his lightsaber and he has to confront Vader. And as a kid, I was like, well, why are they making him confront Vader? I don't understand. Could keep saying no violence, but now I know confront doesn't have to mean violence.
Right. Confront doesn't mean physical fight.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I will say I think I have some of those same seeds, because to me, the parts of the Star Wars saga that are most interesting and beloved by me are not the Jedi parts. It's like the scrappy people just trying to like make their way in the universe. Mm-hmm. Because all of that dogma did, I do the same thing where I lean away from it and I'm like,
Yeah. I don't know about this.
Yeah, I don't. I would not have been a part of the Jedi Order for sure.
Well, I think, you know, you're responding to human stories, and like these movies would not have worked had there not been, you know, a great love story at the heart of it, and stories of redemption and the hero's journey. Like, that's all got to be there. Otherwise, it would have been, I'm trying to think of sort of a bad kind of corny space movie from back then, but you had to have those elements for it to work.
Yeah. Right. I mean, the heart of it, I mean, I say this about everything, but I firmly believe in my soul, like what most people are responding to in stories is all about identity and how they identify themselves, how mm-hmm. they identify interacting with that story, and who they identify with in the story. And in this case, you have a bunch of people. Luke is trying to figure out who the hell he is and yeah. what this new information, which is a little bit bonkers to be taking in. I mean, do you remember, Chuck, as a kid, when Obi-Wan showed up as a ghost? Were you like, what the hell is going on here? Like, it completely cracked the whole thing open in a new way.
Yeah, I remember being very confused and there being a lot of playground debate about how those lightsabers worked. Because, like, it'll cut off a hand. It'll also vanish a motherfucker. But right. also, he's alive in another, we thought he was just in like another dimension or something. And there was just a lot of speculation about how it worked and where old Ben Kenobi went. Mm. I still don't know if I understand it.
This is one of those things where like there is a lot of later information that kind of helps bolster those stories, right? Where Qui-Gon is really the first one that figured out that that idea of becoming so one with the Force that death was not the end.
Yeah. Right.
And that you could still communicate with people yeah. in the physical realm.
Which is kind of ironic, because that's what Palpatine was promising
right?
Anakin.
He wanted it so bad, and yep. he couldn't get it. I do have a question for you guys, and I'm presuming everyone is up on The Mandalorian.
I am not this season.
Okay. So Annie.
Yes.
Should I leave for 5 minutes?
You leave, Chuck.
I will take my headphones off for a couple of minutes if you want.
This really will not matter at all, I don't think. We all know. I'm not going to give any spoilers because it's so fun to have the discovery on that show. But so we know at this point that the baby is 50.
Yeah.
The last time I watched Empire, I had this like gobsmacked moment because Yoda mentions that he has been training Jedi for 800 years.
Uh-huh.
He mentions in Jedi that he's 900 years old.
Yeah.
So by this time scale, it's like he was still a little kid when he started training Jedi. Right? Because like, I don't know what happens in the 50 years between 50 and 100.
That's true.
But developmentally, the baby is still real little and very much a baby at 50. So it was just it makes me look at everything about Yoda differently, where I'm like, is this why he is so childlike in so many ways? Is that just an aspect of this species that they always retain that kind of like silly, impulse-driven right. wonder for the entirety of their lives? It makes Yoda super interesting in new ways to me.
Maybe he was exaggerating.
Yoda never lies.
Another thing that's funny about, I guess, me as a kid is I liked Yoda, but that's a type of character I'm automatically suspicious of, the wise old character that's the mentor that seems to know everything. So mm-hmm. I was really like, you know, I like your voice and you're funny, but I don't think I don't see what you're doing. Right.
Are you manipulating me?
I don't like this. I don't like this. But one of the things I really love about this movie is the whole thing feels kind of dreamlike and surreal. And definitely on Dagobah, that gets upped. Like, it just feels like, is this really happening right now? Am I hallucinating?
No, it is. It like, if they would have pulled the rug out and said that was a dream sequence the whole time, it would have made a little bit of sense, because it is sort of surreal. And Luke keeps saying things about, like, I feel like I've been here before, and he alludes to some of that stuff. And it also, like, as far as the first go, the when that X-Wing is floated out of the swamp, that was, I remember being a kid and being like, okay, so,
yeah.
Wow, the Force is much more than lifting rocks and, yeah. And, you know, being able to close your eyes and block laser shots with a lightsaber. Like, the true power of it really kind of hit home when that X-Wing, and it was such a great, great part of the movie.
Yeah. I know Taika Waititi has said that's his favorite, favorite scene. That is why you fail. And the music there is so great. Yeah.
Oh. I cried this morning, you guys.
Yes.
You know which part? And I didn't see it coming. It just, all of a sudden, my eyeballs were leaking at 9:15 a.m. You want to take a guess?
I want to make an Ugnaught joke, but that's not, I want to.
Yeah. Is that like a knock-knock joke?
No, the Ugnaughts on Cloud City.
What are those?
Those little pig face looking dudes.
Oh, okay.
In The Mandalorian, Queel is an Ugnaught.
Okay,
so this is the first time we see Ugnaughts, which also become important.
And that would make me cry?
Yeah. I don't know, maybe.
Anyone? Annie, you got a guess?
C-3PO getting blasted to pieces.
No,
so
that
you got
kind of
through
funny.
Half. So you're the second half.
Oh, yeah, there's a clue.
Context.
Is it when Leia senses Luke?
Fuck yes, it was.
Yeah. That's a moment for me, too, that sometimes triggers me unexpectedly because...
Out of nowhere.
I don't think there is a human alive that has more expressive eyes than Carrie Fisher in that moment.
Yeah, it was... I was just watching the movie, having a good old time, and that music swelled.
Yeah.
I'm, like, starting to get choked up even just thinking about it, so let's just move on. But I was fully fucking crying on the couch. Very, very powerful moment. And yeah. I was just like, what is it? I've seen this movie dozens of times. After all these years, as a 49-year-old man, to just break down in tears like that. Like, what is it about these people? It's remarkable.
It is. It is. I mean, like Holly said, I feel like you do identify with these people, and it just feels... I had a friend who refused to watch Star Wars for the longest time, and she kept saying, I don't like space, and I don't like sci-fi, and I was like, it is not...
I don't like space?
Yeah, she doesn't like things in space. And I was like, it's not... It's like a fantasy or a fairy tale, or it's these archetypes, these themes we all connect to. Like, if you take away that space part, we're into these human characters and how they connect and interact with each other. And it's so powerful still. Like I said, I still act as though when Luke gets his hand cut off and the revelation comes, I'm like, no, this is awful. Every time.
I have a theory on why it sets you off, Chuck.
Okay.
Just because there is a great deal of emotional resonance in that moment. And I think part of it is, right, like we see Luke right before that at an extraordinarily terrifying point, right?
Yeah.
Like he is literally dangling from a weather vane over a gas giant. Like we don't know. And the idea that at your very darkest time, someone that just loves you enough that you have a deep enough connection that they will just know you need help is very moving. And since you did mention as a Pisces that like those kinds of like loyalty relationships are very important to you, I would see why that would be a real touch point for you.
Will you be my therapist?
Sure. Sure.
I can't find a good one. Online therapy sucks.
I have been very happy with online therapy.
Really?
Yeah, my therapist that I had for 4 years left, though, this year. She decided to start teaching full time, which sucked because she was really into Star Wars. So we had all of this like shorthand where we could talk about it. And she would talk about Darth Vader psychology forever if I let her, which was great. So
you're like, sometimes I feel like my husband is just nothing more than a scruffy looking nerve herder. I feel you. And then he pops in the background in the Zoom and goes, who's scruffy looking?
No.
Yeah, I tried this one new guy online therapy, and I literally could tell he was distracted and like surfing the internet or something.
Yeah. Oh,
and I ghosted him. I just like, I left the meeting. I was like, I'm not even going to finish this one.
Yeah. If it's not working, that's not.
No. Yeah.
If it's not working, it's not working. So
he emailed me and he's like, was there something wrong with your connection? I was like, dude, I'm not even going to email you back.
Yes,
yeah. There was something wrong
you.
With the connection.
Yeah. He wouldn't have sensed you dangling from a weather vane and needing help.
No.
What are some of your other favorite lines? Never tell me the odds. I mean, that's one of the greats.
Laugh it up, right. Fuzzball.
Laugh it up, Fuzzball.
Do or do not.
No.
Do or do not.
There is no try. It's cliche, but damn, that's some good advice.
No, I am your father, which everyone, yes. not everyone gets wrong. Next levelers certainly don't, but it's one of the misquoted lines in movie history, I think. Don't you think?
Yeah. One of the most misquoted. I do it. I don't do it anymore because I'm a next leveler, as you say, but I did when I was younger.
I've got one line that is not iconic, but I think it was such a great, efficient way to set up who Lando is that exchange that, that he and, that Han and Leia have right when they get there. She goes, can you trust him? And he goes, no, but he's got no love for the Empire. I'll tell you that. Like, that's all you need to know about the guy. Not trustworthy, but ultimately on our side.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then becomes a heroic general of the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not mad about this, but I was always kind of like, wow, Han came out of this carbonite thing and then just trusted Lando immediately. I'd be kind of like, wait a minute.
Let's talk about the carbonite.
Okay.
Yeah.
How awful that scene was to see for the first time.
It was very upsetting. There was a lot of, I mean, again, because I'm in your age group, I remember hearing other kids in the audience go, is he dead? Like immediately.
Yeah. And that the look on his face, the way they did it, it was meant to devastate.
Yeah. And it succeeded.
Yeah.
And he's sad right now.
It is interesting. Again, I get really jealous that I didn't have this experience of not knowing. But it is interesting to remember that these were made, like, kids were in mind largely, and I find it really interesting that George Lucas like talked to child psychologists and was like, is this really going to mess them up, especially with Vader? And that's why he was told that if a kid really couldn't handle it, they wouldn't believe it, because it was the villain saying, I am your father. But that's why in Jedi, Yoda confirms it. It's like, no, actually, he really is.
Yeah, he gave that great quote. You probably read the same thing, Annie, where he was telling someone, there has to be, as we go out of this movie, if we're going to leave it there,
yeah,
a level of deniability to that fact, because otherwise kids cannot cope for 3 years in the sadness of it. Like, you have to give them a trap door to be like, no, he's the bad guy, so he was lying.
Right.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I love hearing you guys talk about this, because again, I've just always known Han came out of the carbonite. So I didn't have that, like, it was upsetting. And if he hadn't come back and if Harrison Ford had not come back and Han Solo was just lost, so hanging on Jabba's wall, that would have been very, very upsetting.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And I think this is to talk about the different experiences of being a kid and having to wait, and then the way that you were able to consume it. It's just proof that there is no right way. And it's just a little different. I mean, part of me is jealous that you got to dive right into the sequel and didn't have to wait. I'm not going to sit here and say, like, no, it was better to have to wait, and the suspense and everything. It was awful. That's all we talked about for, I mean, however many years it was until Jedi came out.
Three.
Yeah. but you can consume these in different ways at different ages, and they're all great and okay and correct.
Yeah.
And in those 3 years, you got to carry around those sweet, sweet Kenner carry cases full of toys. Although that was getting to the age. I'm curious about this for you, Chuck. Because I know for me, I remember seeing Jedi when I was 12 and saying something about it at school, and some snarky little mean girl was like, Star Wars is dorky. And I wasn't like embarrassed or ashamed, but I was like, I'm just not going to talk about Star Wars with people for a while. This is mine alone now. Mm-hmm. Which is funny because one of my closest friends from high school, he and I did not know until much later in life that we had both been Star Wars dorks the whole time. Because we both had that experience of like, I just won't talk about this with people because not everybody's going to get it.
I don't remember there being any sort of dorky, I don't know, maybe I was naive. I was definitely naive, I'll tell you that. But I kind of thought everyone loved it.
Because I had two brothers and Star Wars was seen as a more masculine thing. Like I was telling you before we got started, Chuck, my parents always gave them the Star Wars stuff, even though I liked it just as much. And so I almost had a pressure to, like, I was protected within the shield of my brother's world where they thought it was cool and I was trying to be cool enough for them so they'd let me play with their Star Wars toys. And that sort of shielded me from, because I was a pretty, like, I dressed as Jedi for Halloween. Like, I was a pretty outward fan, but I just felt so, like, because I had those brothers to compete with.
Yeah.
I was a very competitive child.
Holly, what did you collect? What were your, like back then, what did you collect? And did you think about leaving them in the package for value? Or were you like
no,
me
I did not.
And
I
just played
them?
Yeah.
The thing for me, and I don't know why, but I loved it as a kid. I love it today. Any damn mail away.
Yes.
So after Empire, there was this amazing mail away where you could get an accessory pack that had the gas masks that they wear when they're in the space slug.
Oh, yeah.
Some cute little like Hoth gear backpacks and stuff. And that stuff was like...
So you couldn't buy it?
No, you had to do a mail away with the card backs. That stuff is amazing, and I love it desperately. It's one of those things that when I moved away from home, I left a lot of my Star Wars toys, which my older brother snagged, but I married into an even better collection and then regained nice. Much of my...
He had a dowry?
Much of my... Totally. Oh, you have no idea. We're ridiculous at our house. And then I regained some of my collection as well. But yeah, I mean, I had Bespin Leia on my wedding cake. Like, I think Bespin Leia was on a secondary table. I had regular classic Leia on the cake.
So I had a lot of the small action figures, played with them like crazy. I had the 12-inch Luke Skywalker doll.
Yes.
But only Luke for some reason. I think I had the Millennium Falcon. I had a land speeder for sure. And then I had, and I still have some of the trading cards. I have that calendar. I wasn't a comic book guy, but somehow I do have that first edition, that first issue of the Star Wars comic.
Yeah.
And a couple of other of the comics, but I wasn't like, these were, you know, we didn't have a ton of money. My dad was a high school or elementary school principal. And so we were, you know, solidly middle class kids. But it wasn't like, I want all the stuff. Get it for me. It was this Christmas, you'll get this many things. And if you mow enough lawns, you can get some other stuff. So I had a nice collection, but it wasn't exhaustive or anything like that.
I feel like I should stop talking because I will incriminate myself quickly.
Let's hear it.
I mean, I'm still collecting.
Sure.
At a ridiculous rate.
The classic stuff, like the vintage?
Vintage. I have a little habit, as you guys, I think, know, right? Greedo is my jam.
Yeah.
I love Greedo in every way. And so I have like a whole lot of rescue Greedos. Like if I'm at a toy show and I'll see a bin full of loose figures, I can't leave the Greedos. I don't want them to be there sad and grimy and being touched by people that don't love them.
Right.
But also, I mean, Brian and I just collect a lot.
Yeah.
We both had a lot of stuff when we got married, but it has only grown and grown and grown. And, you know, we don't have kids, so, like, I don't have to worry about somebody's college. That just goes into Star Wars. But, yeah, I there's some good toys coming out. That Black Series stuff is... Mm.
Now, what's that?
The Black Series is the stuff that is, I really like the 6-inch Black Series. They're also doing 3 3/4, which is the scale of the action figures we got when we were kids. Mm-hmm. They're just a little more detailed. The 6-inch ones, obviously, because the scale is a little bit larger, get a little bit more detailed. And I, one of my most beloved possessions right now, it was actually a gift from a very dear friend. Sideshow does some amazing 1/6 scale figures. And I have the Bespin Leia that came out last year. Oh my God, the detail. Like her little cape is actually embroidered and it's all like, it's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen on the planet. I would put it in the Louvre. It's that good. not even joking. So yeah, my Bespin Leia is up there in the things I collect as well. Anything Bespin Leia I want.
All right. I just had to look up Bespin Leia. Of course. It's great.
Yeah.
What about you, Anna? You collect stuff like that?
I do definitely. I'm more of a shirts person, but also, yeah, I cosplay. I'm pointing as you feed. This is my cosplay closet.
Yeah.
And I was going to do we had a group of Princess Leias and we were going to be different Princess Leias. And then I was doing a transition of Luke Skywalker cosplay, because if you notice, like in the first one, he's wearing all white and this one, it's like all gray and the next one, it's all black.
Oh, yeah.
This nice transition that I was going to do. And then I did have, I mean, I'm not proud to admit this, but you know, my brother's got all the Star Wars toys and I would slowly steal them.
Mm-hmm.
So I still have like a hidden box under my bed of like the Star Wars toys I nice. Stole. Yeah. Yeah. You know,
I'm not sure where my stuff is. I think my brother may have it.
Get it back, Chuck.
I have the calendar. I don't think that comic is even around because I think those might actually have a little value to them.
Yeah, probably.
But like who sells that stuff?
I was about to say.
Oh, some people.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where I definitely know friends that have gotten to a point where they're like, I'm just kind of, you know, have it in a drawer.
Yeah.
Right.
But I know there's someone out there that would like, this would make their year to be able to acquire it.
And that's so fair.
They kind of do that balance, especially if they're doing like a house purge or something.
Right.
And really reprioritizing how they want to manage their stuff if they're going through a Marie Kondo phase or whatever. And then they will sometimes part with it.
I mean, that's 40-year-old virgin.
I can't part with anything, so
yeah.
I just sit on a growing pile of action figures
of Greedos.
I know.
How many Greedos do you have?
I don't know.
More than...
You know we don't do reckoning at our house. We don't count.
No, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. We don't do it.
Sure.
Are they displayed everywhere? Or?
I have an altar, which is really a wall. Like, it started out in my sewing room. I have, like, there's a wall that's got a door right in the middle that goes... into a bathroom, and on one side of it I had set
a door
up, like,
that goes
a little,
to Dagobah.
To Dagobah. No, the bathroom's pink. It doesn't look like Dagobah at all. but it goes on one side of the door I had set up like a little corner, and it's got shelving in there, pieces of art. I collect original Greedo art as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'll occasionally commission an artist to do a painting or whatever. And it has shelves and it has various Greedos of all shapes, sizes, ilks, types. And then there's a little green velvet bench under it, and it's where I drink my coffee in the mornings. But my art and stuff collection has grown, so it's now continued across the other side of the door to the other part of the wall. And we've had to move some art out into the living room because I can't contain the Greedo collection.
I think the movie crushers are going to want to see this. So if you feel comfortable sending me a picture,
I will.
I'll post it on the Movie Crush page, and to the delight of everyone.
I will. Oh, I love a little Greedo art. One of my favorite pieces. One of my very dear friends commissioned for me last year an artist to do Greedo in like the Mexican saint style. So it's a Santa Greedo, and
absolutely
beautiful, and I love it so much. And it's on black velvet, and it's like everything you could ever hope for
too.
In life. It's really beautiful. She did a really beautiful job.
Oh, do y'all have anything else on your notes for Empire?
Yes.
Well, and Annie, I know you've got like 8 pages still.
Yes.
Let's hear it.
Well, I would love to talk about the end, like the duel with Vader and the loss of hands. Because it's really fun to watch it when you do know it's his father, because it feels, you know, Luke is the one who attacks first and Vader's just kind of testing him to see what he can do. And all these little things, even his interaction with the Emperor reads really differently when you know that Luke is his son. So I like having that added layer of familial drama, which again, I think we can all relate to.
sure.
And it's just scary, like the way he's sort of the shadow hulking after him. in this maze and kind of just really humiliating him almost, like drawing it out. And then to lose the hand and to lose the innocence of who you thought your father was and what you thought your destiny was and how it's, what could happen. How did that happen to his father and how could that happen to you? It's my favorite. It's my favorite.
Yeah, that, the moment where Luke, and I remember very distinctly being nine, and the moment where Luke releases and chooses to, I'm sure he thought he was going to die.
Yeah.
And not get miraculously saved by the coolest slide in space. Yes.
I do love, too, like Darth Vader is like, this is his first taste at parenting. And he's like, come with me. And his son's like, I'll die first.
Yeah. You got to have should have showed know? Vader after that, like a nice cutback to him just being like, oh.
You know, it's children are stubborn. Vader's got to learn. Also,
he's reading
bad
a
plan.
Book on parenting, trying to take
bad
notes,
plan. Vader, like, cut off his hand, terrorize his friends. Just no.
That's the way to win your child's love, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
That's something I never really thought of, because you know, at a certain point, when you see something enough and you've seen it since as far as you can remember, you don't question why things happen.
Yeah,
I never really understood it. As a child, that he was letting go to die or potentially die. I just was like, well, he's fine. So I didn't think about it.
Right. And that weird series of slides and trap doors that it felt like at that point, Lucas was just like, hey, listen, I have this idea for this cool last shot of him hanging below the spaceship. Like, how do we get him down there?
When you think about it psychologically, though, too, right? Like, someone who has had that moment, because going into that, Obi-Wan and Yoda are like, we cannot help you. You're flying solo if you do this.
Yeah.
It's kind of like someone that falls to their death and it's a really long fall and they have time to think about it. Like when you consider what must be going through his head as he's like, is this what saves me? Oh no, I'm falling some more. I'm not, I thought I gave up, but maybe there's no hope. Like I can't, that's a real like way to mess with somebody's head.
Yeah.
Well, especially when he sort of comes to a rest at the end of the slide. Yeah. It's like, all right, he's trying to get his bearings and then he's on a hatch, apparently. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bad luck that.
Yeah, bad luck. I was thinking about it when I was rewatching it, which I absolutely didn't need to do, but I definitely did.
Sure.
Because I feel like we all have that moment when we become adults and we realize our parents aren't superhuman and they're human too and they can make mistakes.
Yeah.
And this is like that to the nth degree. Like this is like, oh no, it couldn't get much worse than this.
Have you played Battlefront, Annie?
Yeah.
Hey, I played Battlefront.
You have? Did you play Battlefront 2, the old Battlefront 2, where you could run around in the Bespin hallways all the time?
Well, I don't know.
That was heaven. Right, was that 2? I loved all of the Bespin tunnel levels. That used to be date night at our house. Let's just run around Bespin shooting things for 7 hours.
I was actually talking about somebody the other day. The Super Nintendo version of Empire Strikes Back, the game was so hard. And how games back then, I don't know if it's because like clunky mechanics or I don't know, but like that game, I just remember it being so difficult.
I never played it.
Oh, man. I mean, I never beat it. I couldn't. It's impossible.
Game engines were very different.
They were. They were quite different. Something else I wanted to touch on, because I think this is a really interesting generational gap. Is
I think she just called us old.
No. I almost all of my friends, I did like a survey before this when we were doing our Princess Leia episode. Almost all of my friends said they thought Han Solo was way too mean for Princess Leia and that she deserved better. And I feel like
in this movie,
in general, but yeah, in this movie,
yeah. Well, I mean, I think one of the genius things about the character was that he always had one foot out the door. And you never knew. I mean, it was in Star Wars. It was in A New Hope. It was in this. You know, he's always trying to get out of there to live his own life and go back to his life, the anti-hero. And
yeah,
you know, that's not necessarily being mean to Leia, but he certainly wasn't there for her until he kind of had to be. Mm-hmm. Is that fair?
Well, I'm like you, Holly, where I don't like a lot of romance. So it was never my thing. I never really thought about it too much until we did that episode. And I've read arguments where it's actually the Han and Leia relationship is kind of a flip on traditional stereotypes, where he's the one that's like, look, I'm staying, I'm helping with your rebellion, but I need you to admit, like, that this is worth staying for, or like that it's not a dead end. And so when I look at it that way, because he was staying like years and years, I mean 3 years, but for a cause he purportedly didn't believe in.
That's true.
And he kept being like, you know, no, that's not it. Come on, say it. And she just wouldn't say anything. So I definitely see that side of it, which also gives their relationship more depth than him as a character more depth, I think.
Well, this is one of those things that to me got informed a lot. The way I look at it now has shifted because of Solo, right? Because in that instance, you see that Han's initial impulse regarding relationships is a level of loyalty and devotion that is just like beyond. Mm-hmm. And he spends all of this time just trying to figure out a way to get back to Corellia and rescue Kira. And then she kind of screws him over.
Yeah.
And so like he is emotionally not tall enough to ride this ride in terms of like having a grown up relationship. Like he does not have the wherewithal to really be a good potential, you know, partner for her. He is emotionally stunted in a lot of ways. I have often joked in my 20s that Han Solo ruined an entire like generation of people in terms of what they thought a relationship was. And I used to call it Han Solo syndrome because we see women all the time who at, you know, at that time would be like, I really love this guy and he seems great. But he's not really there for me. And I was like, you're going after that because this is what you imprinted on. Do you understand that?
For sure. I mean, certainly there are other characters throughout history that have been like that.
Oh, but yeah.
He really, in a big way, like, I think we can all agree that Han Solo is probably a very selfish lover.
Well, you know, in Return of the Jedi, that's kind of the thing where he's like, he volunteered to be a general to run this mission without her knowing. So it was like an act of love.
Anyway, I
thought about this a lot.
Why did you? And there's also, I know I do this every time, Chuck. I'm sorry. I'm like, books. There is a really marvelous book that I absolutely love called Last Shot, which is written by DJ Older. And it takes place in three time frames and it really examines Han's development. So one is him before he ever meets Leia. One is and when he knew Lando earlier before all of this. Then it's like him and Lando pulling a job, and then it's like him, the age we see him, not quite the age we see him going into like Force Awakens. So at that point, Ben is still a little kid. He has not become Kylo Ren yet. And it's interesting to watch, and it's really beautifully written. There's also some great body horror in it for anybody that's into that. I really, really love that book. It's interesting to see Han Solo puzzling out what it is to be a husband and father, because he knows he's not equipped to do it and he doesn't know what he's doing. And he's spent his whole life improvising and magically succeeding. And now he can't really do that anymore. It doesn't work in a family dynamic to be like, I'm going to do everything by the seat of my pants, because Leia will be like, hey, don't feed the baby that. Hey, don't do that. No, I have to go to work. Mon Mothma is calling. Put a shirt on. Like it's and he's just like, and it is kind of a nice coda to seeing this relationship bubble up and be part of our psyche for all these years, to see like where that lands when they're actually together and how really legitimately hard it is for him and how much it messes with his head.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between someone who is selfish and someone who is incapable of certain behaviors. Not to just give any person a free pass to be selfish, but some people aren't capable, you know, for reasons that probably go back to things like being heartbroken early on or whatever.
Yeah, and we didn't even talk about the famous improvised line, you know,
no.
I love
Which
you,
one?
I know. I know. Han's response to Leia saying, I love you.
That was improvised?
Yeah.
Yes. Because, again, Kersh, all the takes on Earth.
Yeah.
Kersh. Give it up for the, let's pour one out for the Kersh.
And, you know, to anyone listening, I know, like, we came on pretty strong in this one. but if you've never looked at the behind the scenes of how they made this movie, even just images, it's amazing.
It's so good.
And I highly recommend it. Like the AT-ATs, like there's this trap doors they would come up through in the snow. And it's just, it's so good.
It's yeah, I mean, the design is great. The snow speeders, like we got to see a lot of new cool stuff. I remember being a kid and seeing the way they took him down with the harpoons and thinking that was just so cool that they just used a mechanical, like you would trip someone on the playground or something.
Yeah.
And it worked. Then,
yeah, it gets referenced in Captain America Civil War.
It does?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I loved that too. I loved that they found a way to deal with these huge things that were impervious to their lasers. They're like, well, we're scrappy. We can figure this out.
It's a design
flaw.
There's
also... in Star Tours at Disney World and Disneyland, there is a Hoth segment where at one point you are under an AT-AT as it's coming down. And it honestly adds a sense of gravity when you next watch the movie, when you're like, oh, that stuff is big, y'all.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Which is very, very fun.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I've been playing Squadrons on VR, and that's... That's
have
cool.
you? I'm scared because I'm I love VR, but I'm really, really bad at flight games.
Oh,
like I'm right into a wall within seconds every time.
I understand. Yeah. I will say I'm normally like that, but I didn't experience that for this game as of yet. I'm not very good. I'll also say that, but I'm having fun.
Gina, who's never done VR and has two thumbs.
Who could it be?
Are his initials CB?
I think it would make me sick.
I thought that too. The technology has definitely really improved. I'm not saying that it won't make you sick, but
right.
I do have. I don't know about Squadrons because I haven't played it. I know I have been playing the new X-Lab Tales from Galaxy's Edge, and they have a setting in there that is like for people that are prone to motion sickness.
Oh, that's cool.
There's also a great thing that I discovered while doing that, which was the most zen I have maybe felt in the last 20 years, where there's a moment at the end where you're in the end credits, and the way it sets it up, you're kind of floating in space and the credits are going by, which is a little different than they did the credits in Vader Immortal, which was their previous X-Lab Star Wars VR piece, which was like more of a flat thing. So in this, like, you literally can just sit down and it's like you're floating in a star field.
Oh, wow.
And it honestly felt so relaxing and beautiful because you can look all around you in you know, full 360, and it you look down and there's just stars below you, and you look up and they're just above you, and everywhere
sounds
you
so
look
cool.
You're just out in space, and there just happens to be credits also rolling through space. But it's honestly, if anybody has the opportunity, do not skip the credit sequence. Just sit down on your floor
and
enjoy that moment because it's really beautiful.
That sounds great. Well, ladies, this was a lot of fun, as I knew it would be. Let's just go ahead and commit to doing all these damn movies.
Yay!
Like over the next year. I mean, why not? I mean, who else am I going to get?
Monthly Star Wars rabies.
So we'll knock out Return of the Jedi sometime in like January or something. Does that sound good?
Yes.
Yes, please.
All right. Fantastic. So big thanks. You want to plug anything or shout out any Twitters or Instas?
Nah.
Everyone knows where to find me.
Annie, this is when you do it so that people know it and we can get Mark Hamill to tweet at you.
Yes. If anyone has any connections to Mark Hamill, I would very much like just, it could just be hello. That's all. I don't care.
And what is your Twitter handle, Annie? That's how I'm trying to help you.
I'm so shy. I'm already like, oh no.
You have two moms
I know
now.
She's blushing. It's precious.
It is at Annie Reese, AnnEyreese. You can also find me on Savor the Podcast, SAVOR, or Stepmom Never Told You.
There you go.
Yeah.
Holly, what else are you up to these days?
You know, still doing stuff you missed in history class.
Of course.
Also doing Criminalia, which is historical true crime, which is super fun. We're about to finish our season on lady poisoners and move on to stalkers.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Color me intrigued.
There's also a cocktail segment where I come up with a drink that's themed to the topic of the day.
Oh, this sounds fantastic.
You know, that has been so incredibly fun to come up with cocktails. It's like I didn't know that was secretly what I wanted to do with my life until I started doing it. Now I'm like, why was I not always doing this? Yeah. And then you can find me on Twitter at Surliest Girl. And I also have a Star Wars podcast called Full of Sith.
Amazing.
I do every week where it's more of this.
Yeah, that sounds, if you want to dive even deeper and be a next leveler. All right. Thank you, Holly. Thank you, Annie. Can't wait to do this again.
Thanks, Chuck.
Movie Crush is produced and written by Charles Bryant and Noel Brown, edited and engineered by Seth Nicholas Johnson, and scored by Noel Brown here in our home studio at Ponce de Market, Atlanta, Georgia, for iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.